A look at the news near your neighborhood. The Fairfield University Graduate and Professional Studies around the region. Now on Melissa in the Morning, WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
Police Chief Carl Jacobson admitted to stealing money from a designated city fund that the department uses to support its confidential informant program. The fund is used to pay individuals who provide the department with confidential information to help solve crimes.
We are continuing our coverage following the very drastic retirement announcement of former Chief of Police Carl Jacobson from the New Haven Police Department. As we reported this week, the New Haven Police Department, there were three different assistant chiefs who approached Carl Jacobson earlier this week, and he allegedly admitted to taking money from a city fund used for confidential informants. You just heard New Haven Mayor Justin Elliker talk about that there. But I obviously want to talk about this fund. I want to understand it a little bit better. Right now, the Connecticut State Police, they have launched an investigation into those allegations of misuse of funds. We also know that at this point, they haven't told us how much money was actually taken out. I don't know how big this fund is. I don't know how long Carl Jacobson was allegedly taking money from it. We know he was set to end his four-year contract at the end of this month. Again, how that could pertain to this, we don't know at this point. But I want to understand this fund in particular. Is this something that they just have at New Haven? Is this something the average police department has? So to get sort of an insight into this, some perspective on this, we go to one of our law enforcement experts on the show. Gary McNamara is here. He was a former chief of police in Fairfield. He currently runs public safety at Sacred Heart University. And Gary, I know I'm not going to ask you anything personal because I believe you know Carl Jacobson. Obviously, you guys work in the same realm in some regard. So I'm not going to ask you about the investigation or anything about Jacobson in particular. I really want to understand this fund, though. So thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
Of course, Melissa. It's disappointing and troubling. But at the same time, you know, people have a lot of questions. So we can certainly at least have a discussion on some of the things that surround the fund and or those type of activities in police departments.
So is this a fund that is used typically at most police departments? I didn't actually realize that there were funds like this that would go specifically to informants.
Yeah, well, so if you think about it, you know, sometimes people come forward with information that further investigations. And we use an example of a drug investigation. So somebody might get arrested and they might have information and they might provide it. But then there are times when people provide more information or are willing to do or provide more detailed information. And sometimes that could involve registering them because there's a process in place for all of this. It's not like there shouldn't be a desk draw full of money and somebody comes in and says, hey, give me $100 and I'll tell you some information. I mean, when it comes to confidential informants, so they have to be registered. This process is in place generally around the state and federally. So you have to register them establish a process to provide information or do things to further investigations. During that process, there may be, hey, if you are cooperating with us, then there may be a financial incentive to that. But it has to be documented in a process. And the reason for that is, number one, you want to make sure since you're exchanging money that there's a record keeping in place to do that. But at the same time, if it's furthering an investigation that may lead to an arrest, then that will all be discoverable. Not necessarily the identity potentially of the informant, but that an informant exists, that they've proven to be reliable, that the information and whether or not they were paid for that information is reliable. So it has to be a process in place and checks and balances to make sure that the money's being used appropriately.
And this isn't really a question for Gary in particular, those who are listening right now. I'm probably going to ask this of Attorney Bill Bloss, who, again, has absolutely nothing to do with this case, but can give kind of the legal expertise on this. Because my understanding, Gary, is that the now acting police chief, who was assistant chief up until this all happened, he was actually responsible for managing the money. So I don't know what kind of legal implications that means for him. But what you're saying is, okay, this fund is something that's pretty typical for the average police department to have. It's, I mean, how long has that been something that's been in practice, I guess, for law enforcement? Like, this isn't a new concept, right?
No, not at all. No. And again, the funds generally are not necessarily in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, federally, there's funding for that kind of stuff. But generally, departments have a little bit of, you know, money that they can use to further investigation. So when I was a detective, if I had somebody that I believed would be fruitful for furthering an investigation, I would go to the next level of the supervisor. We'd discuss it. We'd document that I had the money, that there was a receipt made, and that it was brought up. Now, my understanding is that in New Haven, you know, not getting too much into the details of it, but yeah, there has to be a sign off, and maybe that assistant chief at the time was signing off on that. But to get to the level where the chief is actually handling money, I mean, it really generally doesn't get to that level. It would be some sort of a responsible supervisor that's above the road level, maybe a sergeant, maybe a lieutenant, that manages that fund to make sure that we don't have this happening. So, but obviously he was one of those individuals that came forward. So once it was determined that this might be some shady stuff going on, he was certainly one of those people to come forward. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's concerns throughout the New Haven Police Department as it relates to anybody who had money and anybody that was involved with this. Certainly, it appears that it was only at that higher level where there was something bad occurring. But once it was discovered, you got to give credit to the New Haven police and officers and the department and their integrity to say, hey, We've got this information, and we're not just going to, you know, you can't just repay the fund and make it all go away. This is something that has to be reported for the integrity and good of the entire agency.
And again, Gary McNamara is here. He's a former chief of police in the town of Fairfield, currently running public safety and government affairs over at Sacred Heart University. Just kind of giving perspective on this and not really getting into the exact nitty gritty of this case in particular, because Gary can't speak to that. He doesn't work at that department. He doesn't work with these officers. But he certainly can give the perspective of being a chief and kind of going up the rankings, obviously, to that level at the Fairfield Police Department in the past. So according to New Haven Independent, this confidential information money fund currently has just over $50,000 in it. They've already frozen the account and it's obviously under review. But what you're saying, Gary, so let's go to if you were at Fairfield PD right now. So when you were the chief at Fairfield, if you wanted to pull money, what you're saying is you'd have to go to whoever's managing the money, somebody else at the department, whoever's managing it. Did you have to give them reason? Did you have to do like a full report, documentation, proof? I mean, what did you have to provide to get it? Because again, not you speaking to any of the officers involved at New Haven, but just to understand protocol, how this typically works, it has to imply, I would think, then that somebody either didn't care enough to get the documentation from Jacobson or that they in some regard knew where the money was going, which would mean that potentially somebody else could get in trouble in this. And again, I'm not asking you to speak on anyone in particular, but how were the protocols for you when you were chief in Fairfield?
Yeah, it wouldn't even enter my realm. There'd be no reason for me to go and say I need money out of the confidential informant fund. Now, if that fund, you know, that might be federal asset forfeiture money, which could create problems for, you know, because it could touch on federal money. You know, like sometimes when cases go on federal asset forfeiture, sometimes money comes back to police departments and that may go into part of that fund.
Okay.
But so if I was the chief and we needed an expenditure, and that was not only a confidential informant fund, but it was also a fund for some petty supplies or something. If I were to go and say I would have to get a receipt and that receipt would be part of the record. Because when it comes to, you know this, I mean, I know we all know this. When it comes to money, it's not our money. It's taxpayer money or it's federal taxpayer money that somehow comes to us. And we can't treat it like, you know, that, hey, a nickel here, $100 here, $1,000 here. You know, we have to document and account for that information and it should be audited regularly. But as a police chief, I don't think I would have ever gone to a detective supervisor and say, listen, out of the confidential fund, I'm dealing now and managing confidential informants.
So but who would then, Gary? So, okay, so let's just come up with a random scenario. And again, this is very off the cuff, those who are listening. We are not talking about the specific situation in New Haven because we just don't have those details. You're at Fairfield. Okay, and I don't even know why you would need a confidential informant. I don't know. Come up with a random reason why you would need one. You're having a really hard time breaking a case, let's just say. I mean, first of all, does this
so
fund...
let's just take a random one. There's a car theft ring, and somebody comes forward and says that I have information.
Great.
And I can further that case for
okay,
you.
So Joe Schmo says to you, hey, Chief McNamara, I know who is breaking into all these cars, and I could give you the name and the address or whatever. So how does the money come out to pay this person? You're not the one who makes that call? Who makes that call?
No, it will be handled down to the investigators, and the investigors.
So you're like, all right, cool. Thanks, Joe Schmo. I'm going to give this to the investigators who are handling this case.
Yeah.
You're pretty much hands off as a chief.
Yeah. If I'm doing police investigations, then I'm not doing chief stuff. You know, I mean, it would just be handed off to the investigators to kind of further the case. And then they may talk to the individual and, you know, just information alone generally isn't something that they'd be paid for. But if they said, hey, you know what, I can get you to the location and I'm going to go in and, you know, whatever, I'm not going to kind of details of an investigation, but I'm going to go in and do and further get better information for you. But, you know, I have no money. And well, then, you know, then what if we were to pay you $100 to do X, Y, or Z? And again, it would have to be registered. They'd have to be brought in as a confidential informant, because that would be part of the arrest warrant. And then when you get it to them, they'd say, wait a minute, a confidential informant came in. He only gave that information, which is a lie, because he was paid for it. So it has to kind of, you know, from the start to the finish. But it would be, that's kind of an example of how it would go.
Right.
I would get a call. Generally, I wouldn't even get a call. But if I got a call that said this, I'd just turn it over to the investigators and let them deal with it. And part of the tools of an investigation is confidential informants. Now, if you have a confidential informant, and part of that arrangement is that for the information you do or the actions that you do, we're going to give you a certain amount of money, then that is part of the process. However, that has to be accounted for. And maybe this process in New Haven was just different. Maybe the chief handled it at a lower level, and he got promoted. He just kind of continued to handle it and account for the money. And maybe that's the way it worked there. But generally speaking, it's at a different level than the police chief's level.
I think that's so interesting. And I do think that gives perspective in this story, which makes this even more complicated. And I just think it's far from over. I again... This is just an educated guess from looking from afar, but I do worry if there are others who could be involved. Like, again, when this story first broke, my initial thought was, is this an isolated where you've got one person who made a really bad decision? Or, you know, because, again, it reminded me a lot of totally different circumstances, but AJ Perez, former chief of police in Bridgeport. And the fact that he, you know, went to prison for cheating on the exam to become the chief and then lying to the FBI about it. That was an isolated thing. Nobody else really took the fall for that because that was a decision that he made. And so you sort of teeter. Is this something that is an isolated one person? But the way you're describing it, and again, you didn't work at New Haven PD, but to just generally speaking how this fund works, it would sound like potentially somebody dropped the ball here. Now, I don't know if that would implicate them to go to jail per se, but, you know, somebody could have potentially also been involved in this scheme.
Yeah, well, so there's the difference between criminal violations and then maybe policy violations. And so there may be some, as they review it, there may be some policies that were not adhered to. Maybe that somebody that signed off on something didn't actually see or file it appropriately. So there may be some policy violations, but the minute difference between policy violation and obviously criminal information is once it became that this money was actually being diverted in a potentially inappropriate way, that information came forward. And so that's the difference. Even somebody that might have a policy violation, once they realize that it's crossing potentially to a criminal violation, they come forward. So I think criminally, unless, you know, more information comes out in May that there may be others criminally, I would probably bet that if there's anything and a lower level of somebody else involved, it was probably just a policy violation. violation. And you can maybe understand it a little bit if the chief is kind of managing it on his own or doing some things and someone's just signing off on it. So it could be policy violation as opposed to having other people involved in a criminal matter.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, we're in the very beginning stages, obviously. And as mentioned, the Connecticut State Police have launched an investigation into those allegations of misuse of public funds and theft by now former New Haven Police Chief Carl Jacobson. And we'll continue to follow this very closely for you. But Gary McNamara, always appreciate getting your perspective. Thank you so, so much. And we'll talk soon.
You got it, Melissa. Thank you.
All right. Again, Gary is the former chief of police in Fairfield, currently running public safety and government affairs over at Sacred Heart University, one of our law enforcement experts on the show, right here on WICC.